Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Eli, my man, let's go. Hour four of the show. It is guest week here on the show. I am bringing in some of my favorite people, and we are talking about some of my favorite things. That's what happens during All-Star Week. It's an opportunity to hang out and do all sorts of stuff. On Friday, I am taking the day off. I will not be here. In my stead, it will be Matt Spiegel and Eric Edholm. They will be doing the show. Eric's one of my favorite people. I'm just not going to lie to you, straight up and down. He's one of my favorite people. So I brought him in for guest week early to hang out with me and preview the fact that he's going to be hanging out and holding down my show on Friday. What's up, man?
It's good, man. I'm looking forward to it. I was in here on Saturday as well. Did a little baseball talk, a little football. Okay, so I feel like we talked about the Parker move the most.
For sure.
So that was the big thing that day. So, yeah, it's been good. I've been in here more in the last week than I have in probably the last 4 months before that. So,
do you have that muscle memory of camps getting ready to start?
I have no muscle. That's really, I hate to say it like that, but yeah, it's funny because it, like you guys were talking earlier, I was thinking, I'm like, it does feel like it's come earlier this year. You know, every year I say that, and usually, you know, the family and I get away for a little short break. We didn't do that this year just for a couple reasons, but. All of a sudden, this weekend, I was looking at the calendar. I went, oh, my gosh, Bears, I've got to be down there this weekend. And not the whole weekend, but part of it. And I thought, buckle up, dude. Here we go. You know, it's coming.
It's starting again. And it's like, okay, it's like, here we go.
It's good. I mean, I'm not mad. I'm not angry that football's here. It's more from the job perspective. It's just like, all right, well, here's... You know, here's where we make our money, I guess. So.
It's funny. I haven't talked a lot of football this spring/summer.
Yeah.
I just haven't. Like, I don't know why it hasn't been in me. And there's been a lot of baseball stuff to cover. There's been a lot of fun stuff with the Cubs. And the Bulls have been seemingly relevant over the last couple of months. So that's good. With football, there's a few questions I do have, which is why I'm glad that you're here.
Sure.
It's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you. As we get ready for the season to begin, one thing that frustrates me as someone who is around this a lot is how people assume just because their team seemingly got better that the other teams didn't get better. In the case of the Bears, I can make a very good case for them getting better. The coach, I think, is kind of exciting. I'm not as sold as others are on the quarterback, but I get why people are excited. I thought they had a very strong draft. When you look at the rest of the division, did the rest of the division get any better? And is there legitimate reason for Bears fans to feel like their team got better than the other teams got better?
Yeah, it's hard not to think about what the other three teams do in the division because you're playing them 42% of your season, you know, 6 out of 16 games or whatever. And so, you know, it's natural to look at it like that. The Vikings were 13-3, you know, in the NFC Championship game. In theory, they upgraded a quarterback. You know, they kept their core in place. They get Dalvin Cook back, and they add Sheldon Richardson to that defense. So, I mean, they had a high bar, and they seemed to at least raise it up. I have my doubts whether Kirk Cousins is going to play noticeably better than what Case Keenum did last year, because Keenum was really, really good until the final, you know, six quarters of the playoffs. But So let's say they're just moderately improved. Green Bay, with Aaron Rodgers back, got to be better. Defense, big additions on both sides, on the defensive side of the ball. The Lions, who knows? It's a tough one because they have a new head coach. Matt Patricia is there. I wouldn't be shocked at a small step back. So when you look at it through that lens, I think the Bears, even in this tough division, still made noticeable enough improvements at a couple positions, certainly receiver, you know, that you'd have to think they're going to see some kind of improvement this year. Offensive line, I would think, would be better, too, with Harry Heistam back and, you know, that group.
What if people around the league told you about Nagy?
Yeah, like super detail-oriented guy. The best conversation I had this offseason was actually with Chase Daniel, you know, who's going to probably be Mitch's backup this year. Now, Chase has known Nagy from Kansas City. They worked there for 3 years. Alex Smith, Chase, and Nagy, he was the quarterback coach. And he said the best thing about him is that, like, you could come to him with a play you ran in high school 8 years before and be like, "Coach, this works in the red zone. Look, check this out." And he'll sit down with you, break it down, see what the defense is doing, and he'll think about the idea. He may not use it, but he'll at least sort of humor you. And he's open to everything. That's why I think he and Helfrich are going to work pretty well together. I think they're going to be able to put their minds together. There's not going to be so much ego. It's not going to work. And that, man, I was at one of the OTA practices, and he was fired up. Nagy was getting on some nobody receiver for not completing a drill the way he wanted. So he may be that, like, cool, young, friendly, hip guy, but he's also going to chew you out if you don't do it right.
What is it about the Andy Reid tree that allows his assistants to go on to be head coach?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like Bill Belichick can't sprout, you know. I mean, every one of his coaches makes it about 3-4 years, and, you know, where's Eric Mangini these days? You know what? Romo Crennel's a defensive coordinator probably for life now. You know, we don't know what other guys are going to do from that. I don't know that Patricia's going to be a good head coach, but Andy Reid has developed some pretty darn good head coaches so far. And, you know, Doug Peterson wins a Super Bowl last year, this year. That's a great question. And I haven't been able to get, you know, I don't know if it's consistent with every single example, but I think Andy does put a large amount of trust in his guys. He develops them as they go. And that's something Belichick tried to do. He cross-trained guys, different positions. He coached offense 1 year, defense the next, unusual stuff like that. But, you know, Andy always had a pretty good succession plan, too. He'd bring in veteran coaches to work with young coaches, you know. And when the veteran coach was ready to leave, the young guy was ready to step up. So there was always like a 2 or 3 year kind of vision with him on his Eagles staffs and then later on his Kansas City staffs.
Eric's worked everywhere in
this
business.
I know, right? Feels like it, yeah.
And now he's working for Pro Football Weekly again.
Yeah, 2.0.
Back there.
Yeah.
For you, with all the teams that you've covered, when there is a coaching change, what things are you looking at in year one?
That's a good question. I mean, obviously, you want to see like what happens when they lose 2 in a row, 3 in a row, do things just fall apart? You know, is the kind of the shimmer off the gemstone a little bit there? And are people starting to kind of hang their heads? And, you know, to be fair, I was in that Bears locker room midseason last year when they were 3-5, and there was still upbeat guys, you know, with John Fox, who everybody felt like was sort of a dead man walking. And then they lose to Green Bay without Rodgers, and it just... With a first-year head coach, you expect it to last a lot longer. But I've seen some first-year head coaches where 6 months, 10 months on the job, people are already starting to think like, wow, this isn't this isn't built to last. So
you can go ahead and say Ben McAdoo's name.
Yeah,
you can go ahead and
that's
say
a good
it.
Example, right? Have people read that? I want to know if people have read his comments. The flame throwing that has gone on, that's amazing.
What do you think about that? Because that's a strange thing a guy who is still, I would guess, young enough and connected enough to get back into the league
you
want it.
Yeah. The crazy thing is, too, there were teams, including the Philadelphia Eagles, I might add, who were not happy they didn't get him, that the Giants were able to, quote-unquote, steal him or whatever, you know, that they were able to kind of get him the head coach job. He had multiple offers. This was a guy who was in demand. He was kind of seen as this super cerebral offensive guru. You know, he's going to put this Aaron Rodgers passing game in New York. If you can't adjust your system to the players, number one, that's not going to hold water. Number two, if you're going to be this strange sort of cold robotic guy as a head coach and then become unhinged after you're fired, it's not going to reflect very well on your job prospects for anything above QB coach or coordinator from here on out.
That's the way that it seems. Yeah. I am shocked that it made me feel like, oh, well, this is a guy that thinks that he might have a future in television. Because he clearly doesn't have a future coaching again.
Oh, my gosh. And what's funny is if you watched any of the Giants press conferences, like, you know, when they lose to the Lions in week 2, it was a pathetic performance, absolutely awful. You know, he had no answers for why they didn't try to score at the end of the half, why they didn't do this. It was obvious stuff that, you know, a guy who's watched 10 football games in his life would know. You got to go for it here, man. What are you doing? Why aren't you calling timeout? And he just wouldn't give any answers. He was shutting people down. He wasn't defending his quarterback. It was ugly stuff. And now he's doing a different kind of ugly.
Why do we see seemingly men who are put into the box of, well, this guy's a genius. You know, this guy really knows the game. Why do we see them make what are simple mistakes? Now, I get we're watching the game at home. We don't have 20 people in our headset.
Right.
But you're supposed to be the CEO of the team.
Yeah.
So why do some of these simple mistakes happen at the highest level of the game?
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys, and I let's just use offensive coordinators as an example, because the trend in the league has been to hire all these hotshot OCs and fancy play callers and the new innovative dudes. And you know, Nagy would be in that discussion too. But you're sitting up in a booth. You're calling in place. You've got really one job. You're a unitasker. You know, your job is to get the information on what the defense is doing, what substitutions they're making, what personnel you have on the field, what plays you want. The head coach may chime in and say, hey, I want you to run the ball here. We're going to go for it on fourth, whatever. So you really have one job. You're not calling timeouts. You're not really making play-to-play substitutions. You can call for a certain package, but I mean, you're watching 24 guys on offense. And meanwhile, there's, you know, 46 on game day. And it becomes a whole big thing. And you start thinking about strategy and how to, you know, manage the game, they always say, right? I mean, it's a tough job. That's why, you know, Nagy calling plays year one, that's a lot. Dude wasn't even calling plays 2 years ago.
I have a lot of questions about that. And the reason why, not that the Helfrich thing, there's any reason for concern, but Nagy's never done this like on a full-time basis.
Right.
Like, he's never done this. So now you're adding the responsibility of being a head coach along with the responsibility of play calling for a young quarterback who's in the first year of your system and an offensive coordinator who hasn't called plays at the NFL level either. That's why I loved the Brad Childress signing, because I felt like if there is some sort of like, this isn't working out, in case of emergency, break glass, here's Brad Childress.
Right. A veteran guy who's been a play caller before, who's worked with Nagy in two different spots, you know. So, yeah, absolutely. That layer of insurance is nice to have. I think it was a pretty good move, you know, bringing him on. But, yeah, it's tough. And Mark Helfrich, I think, is trying to, you know, you'd hope in 2 years, I think he would like to get back into college coach. It's me guessing. I don't really know that. But he's going to want to put on a good impression, too. So, I mean, whatever responsibility he has, he's got to be able to carry through without stepping on toes. So, yeah, it's going to be a very interesting dynamic for them. Quarterback with 12 starts, new X receiver, new Z receiver, new Y receiver. You know, I mean, it's a lot going on right now.
I want to ask you about the quarterback, and I guess
you're not a fan, huh? You're not, or you're tempering your.
I'm not convinced.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's not that I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
It's that I'm not convinced. And there was nothing that happened last year. I have a hard time believing anyone who tells me they saw something where they're like, this guy's going to be great. Now, I didn't see anything that said that he was going to be a bust either.
Right, right.
But I definitely didn't see anything that was like, man, there's that guy's got it. So What am I either 100% right on or 100% wrong on when it comes to Trubisky?
You haven't been sitting in your man cave watching the second half of the Bengals game over and over on loop this summer. I don't blame you. Believe me. That's what you got to hang your hat on, right? It's like, okay.
That's a team that quit that day, too.
Absolutely,
I mean, just
did.
Flat out quit.
They gave up. They did. There's
and they
no
were
doubt.
Still in the playoff hunt, and they flat out quit.
And I even hate saying that I kind of like the Bengals' talent this year, because I think back on games like that and I'm like, what a joke, man. You know, they bring the head coach, but whatever. That's a whole other story. But okay, yeah. So first start against the Vikings wasn't terrible. Looked reasonably comfortable out there, made a couple plays, whatever. It wasn't a bad first start at all. You know, they held him back so badly in the Ravens game. He made the one really nice throw in overtime. They held him back so badly in the Carolina game. He had more sacks than completions, I think, in that game, right? He was like 4 of 7 passing with like 5 sacks or something. But so, you know, those aren't even like true barometers. So all you really have to go on are a handful of performances against teams like the Bengals where, you know, even though the Bengals defense wasn't bad in the second half, that particular game, I don't know what happened. They just, like you said, they threw the towel in. So
what I don't understand is why people are so high on Trubisky. And it goes, and to me, it goes back to the draft too, where I look at what Pace did with the trade and I go, was Mitchell Trubisky, in Pace's mind, that much better than Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes that he felt the need to move the 2 third-round picks to move up the one spot? And I'm just having a really hard time going, what is it? What is it that you saw? What is it? What on the North Carolina 1 year of tape did you see that made you go, yes, this is the guy that's going to keep me employed for the next 10 years?
Fair question. Of those 13 starts, I counted at UNC. I went and watched all of them just because I was like, well, we got his whole resume right here. It doesn't take that long, you know. And I watched 4 of those games were not that great. I mean, you know, like, he had some big performance at FSU. Fantastic. Like, he looked like an NFL quarterback, no question in my mind. The bowl game against Stanford made some terrible throws.
At the end was awful.
But then he was at least, you saw a guy who was like battling, and you're like, okay. I mean, he gave it it was like a pitcher without his best stuff. You know, he was just fighting to get to the end of the game, you know. So it was such a mixed bag, but the highlight throws and all the good stuff that was in there, it was like, man, there's something here. The thing that I think people, the draft resume, the trade, that obviously boosts his value before he's ever done anything. And then people are latching on to this Jared Goff thing, where Goff was horrible year one, and he was pretty great last year. Everyone is kind of assuming that Mitch is going to do the Goff 2008 version of, or 18 version of it. So it's just, you know, those kind of ascensions do not happen every year.
For people who don't know, why did the Rams make that big jump? And I do think that there are some major differences here. Like, for example, McVay had a nice successful track record as a play caller at the NFL level.
Yep.
It is not the same thing with Nagy. But what was it about the Rams offense that allowed them to take that next jump in a year where, honestly, Jared Goff first year didn't look like he belonged in the NFL.
I know, right?
And then he looked great. So what happened? How did it work for them?
Yeah, they schemed so well, and they got people. They would bring 2 tight ends on the field, so base defense comes on, and then they would throw it out wide. You know, they would work against whatever the defense's perceived strength was. They'd use great receiver combinations. Robert Woods, you know, kind of a good number two. Cooper Kupp, college, you know, standout, but a small school guy, Eastern Washington. Sammy Watkins hadn't really played like a top 10 pick to this point. They just used them on routes to the best of their ability and really attacked whatever the perceived defensive weaknesses. And they knew how to use Todd Gurley. I mean, that was what Jeff Fisher could not figure out in year two. It was like,
you can throw the ball to him.
Yeah, right.
If you want.
How much was that a part of his season? 6 touchdown catches? I mean, he caught a lot of balls, right? They got a little too cute with that at times. But, yeah, the Seattle game or whatever. But I'll tell you what. Yeah, just that offensive innovation. If Nagy is close to that level somewhere, I think the Bears will be all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what did you think of their draft?
Bears? Anthony Miller's a player. Let me tell you, that's an exciting one. I was a huge Roquan Smith fan. I think I had him my number 4 or 5 overall player. I really like the guy. So right there, they did well. James Daniels, I had pretty darn high on my list. Now, he's 20 years old, Lawrence. I mean, he's going to be 20 still technically in week one. I think he turns on like the Tuesday after week. Yeah, so can't buy a beer. And so if they beat Green Bay, he's gotta be the teetotaler. But yeah, those three guys I think are the big three, and I think they'll be good players. James Daniels, I don't think they should expect week one. He's the starting left guard. That's too much, I think. And even Kirk Ferentz, when I talked to him, was kind of like, hey, you know, he took a year in our system to kind of get his feet wet. So that's... But I think he's a great player. You know, that was kind of what his message was. The sleeper for me, if he can stay healthy, is Kylie Fitz. That's the dude who really opened my eyes at the Senior Bowl. Didn't know much about him, knew the name, you know, and had been injured in college. And I'm sitting there watching one of the first practices down there in Mobile. And he put this dude through a spin cycle on a pass rush drill. And I was like, oh, hello. You know, like, I'm going to have my eye on this guy. And, like, every practice that week, he seemed to do something. So... You know, the dude hasn't stayed healthy very often, so there's a reason why he went in, what, round 6 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if he's healthy, I'm just going to throw the name Mark Anderson out there. As far as, like, a role, I'm not saying 11 sacks Pro Bowl as a rookie, but, like, if you told me he could be their third down rusher that they probably need opposite Leonard Floyd, wouldn't shock me.
Eric at home is here with me. He writes for Pro Football Weekly. He's written for everyone. He does an incredible job covering the NFL. He's one of the people that I go to when I want to know what's going on in the league. And I feel like I've bombarded you with Bears questions.
Oh, that's what people are talking about.
That wasn't necessarily my plan. I'd rather talk to you about your shirt. You're wearing a Paisley Park shirt.
In fact, this is a good little segue here. You and I were talking about Bears-Colts Super Bowl week. Prince was the halftime performer, but... I don't want to speak for you, but I think in our minds, as amazing as that performance was, the couple of hundred people in the media room who got to see Prince's quote unquote press conference, which, as we've noted, was not really a press conference. That was a special little, you know.
All right, so give me, because I've told the story from my perspective of what it was like. From your perspective, why did you even go to the Prince press conference?
Yeah, that's a great question too, because I had seen him, I think, the night before at the Hard Rock and paid like $100. I didn't have $100 to my name. I was so broke back. You know, this is the early days of PFW, the dark ages, I guess. But yeah, I mean, like, I made sure I was going to go to that club show, paid my money, got in, had a blast. And I was kind of iffy on it. I'm like, you know, what's he really going to say, blah, blah, blah. And I was chasing down, of all people, Vince Young. I was trying to get him. I was doing some Titans stuff at the time. He had just, I think, won Rookie of the Year or whatever. And so he's like, hey, man, I'll be out of this. I'm taping this segment. I'll be out in like 5 minutes. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Meanwhile, Prince press conference is coming up. And I know it's like right down the hall and I could make it. I'm like, man, do I bail on Vince Young? Because he was the big story at the time. I got Vince. He gave me like 3 questions, and I just sprinted. And I was like, I can still make it. I can still do this, right? So I run down the hall, not in peak shape, make it to that. It wasn't even in one of the big conference rooms.
Right. It was in like an ante room.
Yes. It was like one of the auxiliary, smaller press conference
rooms. One where
rooms.
They like roll the wall in.
Right. The fake wall where, like, yeah, they like the 8th grade graduation room, right?
Yes.
That's what it was like. So I thought, because in past years, like Paul McCartney, oh, hello, everyone. It was like 9 million people in the room. And so I literally ran in right as Prince and his band are walking out. And I'm like, dude. You know, all right, this is what I'm here for, you know, sweating, dripping in sweat. I'm you know, I'm, you know, so he comes out. How did he say it? He was like, any questions?
Contrary to popular belief, I will answer your questions. And as soon as the guy, I forgot who it was, who asked the question, but as soon as he opened his mouth, I was like, don't. Because I felt like Prince was about to embarrass him.
Oh, yeah.
And then he just turns around and starts playing.
Johnny Be Good.
It was just...
Oh, yeah. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Yeah, right. And so, I mean, I think it was probably some football writer asking some dumb question. So we got saved by Prince on that one. So I brought my Paisley Park shirt for the Super Bowl where it was up in Minnesota, and I got to do the tour. Lawrence, you, your listeners, anybody, if you get a chance to do it and you're even remotely a Prince fan, go. It's awesome. And I actually got you, I brought you a gift from Paisley Park.
No.
That I had. I don't have the purple bag it came in. I like somehow lost that or whatever, but this is for you. Hang on one second.
Oh, come on.
This is, since you got me the Birmingham Barons shirt, this or hat, I mean, this is the Paisley Park Archives Exhibition Series tour book. Now, I did handle it with maybe some greasy fingers.
That's so all right.
You know, like
chicken
wings
or something.
Dude, this is incredible. And it's got the layout of the rooms, all the studios. So it's not the real thing. You'll have to go see it in person yourself. But I have flipped through it. It's an awesome, I mean, like that, but I know you guys can't see at home, but there's a picture of, I think,
his
Studio A.
Oh, that is amazing.
Yes, and you're going to love this thing. It's awesome, and it's...
Oh, man, thank you.
It's the best coffee table book in the world. You're going to flip through it, and it's really cool. I mean, I thought it was... And, you know, it was...
This is so great.
When you go on the tour, this is the key, by the way. You can order pancakes from Prince's chef. Like, legit, I'm not even making this up. You can... Like pancakes. You can get the pancakes like the Chappelle skit, right?
No way.
You can order the pancakes. Now, apparently the day I was there, he was a little under the weather. Not Chappelle, but the chef. So I didn't get the pancakes. I do feel like I slightly missed out on that. And it was like 9 at night, so I don't know if I would have been. But anyway.
Oh, man, this is so great.
This is your incentive to go one day and check it out, because it's awesome.
I felt bad because I was in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Uh-huh.
And I was there for a graduation at St. Mary's, which is, you know, like 2 hours away.
Oh, okay.
So we never got to go. So this is,
right.
Oh my God, this is so great.
It's so weird. It's a cool place, man. It's really good.
I am going to be flipping through this a little bit later on tonight. We're going to take a break. More with Eric Edholm after this on The Score. Hanging out with Eric Edholm, who was nice enough to bring a gift. He brought me a book on Paisley Park, which I can never repay him for. This is outstanding. The segment being brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. So, E.
Yeah. L.
Are you excited about football getting started again? I mean, I know that we talk about the muscle memory, but
yeah,
it's going to be an interesting season because there's a lot going on with the NFL overall.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I say this every year, but it's true. And what quietly worries me, and I know there was sort of a statement today that may have undercut this a little bit, but all the new rules going in, and we complain about refs all the time, whether we're fans, media, whatever, it doesn't matter. Players are going to do it too, you know, quietly. But, you know, there's all, especially the leading with the helmet thing, I think of that. And obviously the catch rule has been sort of simplified and all that. But to me, the leading with the head, especially the idea that, you know, Jordan Howard can go through the hole, just plow a linebacker, but if he does it wrong, it's a 15-yard penalty. Plays wiped out. That's a big deal. Like, those plays never, ever got called before. Now they're eligible to be called. So there's that. And I know the rule changes every year. But four of the most senior officials that the NFL has had, a couple of them are, you know, not well-loved. But there's a lot of new college officials coming in. There's a new blood in refereeing. I mean, people aren't really talking about it, but it's going to be a big deal. I suspect...
Aren't there like four new crews?
Yeah. There's a lot of new officials this year. You know, some guys get weeded out every year, but four new crew chiefs, you know what I mean? So that's big. You know, that's a big deal. And you can't say that it's not going to have some kind of effect on the play. So we'll see. I mean, I guess the preseason will give us a taste of what's to come.
We're used to this. It happens every year in July where the NBA goes nuts.
Yeah.
Guys get paid.
Yeah.
It's guaranteed money. And NFL players are like, wait, you guys get completely, totally covered contracts?
Yeah.
Why don't we have this? It happens every year,
yeah,
like clockwork.
Yeah.
The NBA guys get their guaranteed money, and the NFL guys go, why aren't we getting guaranteed money? So here's my question. How do you think that plays in what will be the new CBA negotiations in a couple of years?
Right. After the 2020 season into 2021, there will be a work stoppage. Whether it's – the league locking out the players, or whether it's the players less likely, but whether it's the players striking, I just don't think they will. But yeah, and that theme, some version of it, will be at the center of it. You know, the players last time, the feeling was that the union listened a little too closely to what the players were saying, like took them too literally, which is like, hey, I could use some more off-season time. You know, I'd love to have more time with my family, that sort of thing. Okay, cool. And that was like one of their big, the biggest concession the league gave them. Now, this time around, they've got to be sitting there saying, yeah, the NBA is a poor example because bigger rosters and all that. I mean, it's just a different game and all that. But some version of financial improvement, that's going to have to be one of the biggest things. Now, how do you do it? Do you give veterans a higher minimum? Do you increase the salary cap by a larger percentage? Is there soft versus hard cap? What are the changes that are made? Those are the questions that have to be answered, I guess.
I remember 2009. I remember being in locker rooms, whether you're visiting teams or the Bears, and guys talking about getting ready for 2011.
Yep.
And guys saying,
yeah, hey, a year and a half ahead of time. Right. Yeah.
Hey, save your money.
Yep.
We're going to war.
Yep.
And then the players caved. And I know that generations of players in the NFL churn over pretty quickly. Is there any lesson that can be learned from what went on back in 2011 that players, and there are probably four or five of those guys who are still left in the league, and it's Robbie Gould and like, you know, one other guy. But is there any lesson that can be learned from the way that the players and the owners handle the old CBA that will be taken into the negotiations for the new CBA?
This is going to sound like really dumb advice, but stay off Twitter. Stay off social media. Keep your thoughts to yourself. I know that sound, you know, why you can't tell the players what to say. All I'm saying is this. You know, the news cycles these days are what, like 6 hours, right? People get bored of a story pretty quickly. There's a lot of fatigue. In 2011, Twitter had just become this big thing. You know, most media members were on it. A lot of players were on it, that sort of thing. And every day during the lockout, from March to, you know, July, August, whatever it was, people were, first of all, writing about anything anyone said. You know, it was totally aggregated and written by every single publication because they needed NFL content. They needed something, you know. So if a player got in trouble, if a player said anything bad about what was going on with the union or the owners, it got blown up about six times as much. The long game is important here. You know, just because you've been at war or at lockout or whatever for 3 or 4 months, it really doesn't matter. You have to be prepared to go into the regular season if you really, truly want to get what you want. Is that going to make some people angry? Yeah. Guess what? People get over it. You know, when football's back, they'll forget about that. And the day-to-day grind of like, oh, there's no football, Twitter's awful. You know, it drove some people absolutely crazy. You had media members fighting on Twitter in 2011 about it. It was a rough summer, man, for everybody. You just have to go to the beach, take some time off, relax. It'll work out.
I'm looking forward to this. I truly am, because I'm wondering if they learned. Like, if they learned, like the owners from a negotiation standpoint, took them to the cleaners.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to give you a few padded practices.
Yeah. Nice.
And then what we're going to do is 10 years later, we're going to go, you know why football's not as good now?
Not enough practice.
Not enough padded practices. And they even have former players carrying that water for them.
I know.
It's amazing when you see guys, like I've seen guys that were the team union rep.
Oh, I know.
Now out there talking about how, oh, you know, they don't practice well anymore. The guys aren't in pads. And that's why we're seeing guys need to go back to more padded practices. And I'm like, wow. That is some awesome messaging has been done by the owners.
Oh, it's been like drilled into them, you know. And is it something that coaches will say all the time? Yeah, I mean, John Gruden, his first press conference, like, nope, can't talk to the players. I don't understand these new rules. What's going on? You know, when I coach football, you know, right? Well, things have changed, and when you have guys like that, don't think that the NFL doesn't have some lackey in a back room writing down every single one of those comments, whether it's a current player, former player, whatever, and just making a file out of it. And they'll go in with it and say, you know. And the problem was the union, I felt like last time, they thought, okay, we have an advantage in court. We can use litigation. That's going to be our main weapon. We'll get our court victories. They'll lose. We'll gain the perception of an upper hand. They never got it. Every court battle that they won, it felt like it gained them an inch, and the NFL was still wielding, you know, the real weaponry there. So they've got to come up with a new strategy.
What do you think happens with Le'Veon Bell, and is what's going on with him important?
That's a good question. You know, he reportedly turned down 5 years, $70 million. That's, you know, and he wants something in the range of like 17, 18 million per year. He's turning down $14 million per year over 5 years. Again, they could cut him. So the guaranteed money is the crucial part. But, I mean, he's turning that down because he feels like he's a receiver slash running back. He is in a category unto his own. You know, it's like when Terrell Suggs, the height of his career, he's like, I'm a linebacker and a DN. I'm both. You know, I'm not one or the other, you know. And so I think that's kind of how he feels and why Adisa Bakari, used to be Matt Forte's agent, a couple other prominent running backs. Nope, we're going to wait. Somebody will pay us. And it's a bold strategy, man. I don't know. I mean, even a desperate team with a lot of money to spend, running backs usually aren't super high on their priority list. There's also Todd Gurley's coming up soon. I don't know. So it is important. If he's going to break the bank, I don't know that he's going to do better than this most recent offer.
What's the most interesting story this offseason before we get to camp?
Yeah, well, before we get to camp, I guess you sort of want to know, you know, what's going on with the Eagles and is Wentz ready to go? He's doing 7-on-7s in June. You know, that's a pretty darn good sign he's ready to go. The number of quarterbacks who are either returning from injury or getting the starting crack for the first time, like Mahomes, the young guys, the rookies. Like, all of a sudden, you look around the NFL, there aren't too many teams that really need a young quarterback. So if their best laid plans work out, all of a sudden, I'm not saying you have 32 teams with perfect quarterback situations, but find me a team in the NFC that's like dire need of a quarterback right now. You just can't. There's not really one out there right now. So that's really interesting.
Tampa.
Right. That's maybe the one example, right? And they have the former number one pick in the draft who could, in theory, be, you know, redeem himself. In theory.
I'm less and less impressed with him.
He's so weird.
Very.
Yeah.
And criminal. But even his on the field. Like, yeah. I thought he'd be better, and he just hasn't been. It's been a little bit, it's a bizarre ride that he's taken us on.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack with him. There's a few things I know and can't say because, you know, you know how that goes. But yeah, I mean, he hasn't won over a lot of trust, whether we're talking off-field stuff or on-field. Like even his coaches, you know, Dirk Cutter felt like, I can turn this guy into a really, really good pro. I can make him that kind of, you know, not Steve McNair the runner, but Steve McNair the competitor kind of player. I think that's sort of what people were kind of saying down there.
It seemed like a good match. I mean, isn't that why all the backstabbing went on and Lovey found himself in Champaign?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you felt like, well, here's the offensive coach that is going to able to maximize Jameis Winston.
I know. And heading into last year, you remember, they were everyone's darling sleeper pill. Oh, they're going to win 10 games, you know, challenge for the division, be a wild card team, that sort of thing. They got DeSean Jackson. They got Mike Evans. And it just never worked out. Granted, that defense was terrible. But it's not like Winston played well either. And on top of that, oh, by the way, he's got at least two strikes, if not, you know, coming up halfway through his third one. So
what do you think of what Cleveland has done?
You know, it's...
I'm fascinated.
Oh,
by
I am
them.
Too. I think Hard Knocks will be good. Anyone who's a fan of the show has been disappointed. Tampa last year was terrible. You know, I mean, there have been some...
Jameis on there being fake.
Yeah, it was a bad... That was it. You go back and watch those. He looks very phony in a lot of those things. But yeah, I mean, last season was totally forgettable otherwise. This year, you know, you got Jarvis Landry. You got Josh Gordon. I mean, come on, right there, that's exciting. You know, you have...
Baker Mayfield
and like... The guy who, in theory, could hold him off for a long time, Tyrod Taylor. I'm not super convinced that's going to happen, but you know, all Greg Williams throwing F bombs around on HBO.
Kill the head.
Oh my God. I feel pretty good promising it's going to be a fun preseason.
If I set the over under on Tyrod Taylor quarterback starts this year at 9.5.
Ooh, good number. That's a good number. Yeah. I was thinking like kind of 8 to 10 starts, and then they kind of see where he's at. The best thing he'll provide is the no turnovers. You look back, I mean, Deshaun Kizer was throwing red zone picks and, you know, pick sixes. It was just terrible. I mean, the fumbles and the picks and, you know, they had the worst turnover ratio in the league. They just couldn't hold on to the ball. Tyrod, one of the best turnover ratios in the league. He's risk averse, you know, and that's going to really help them. They almost beat Pittsburgh twice last year. You know, they had two other games that were very close. They should have won. They're not terrible, but they still have some work to do.
Who's your favorite coach to talk to in the league?
Nagy was pretty good. I was shocked at how good he was. That's a great question, though. I'm sure I'll think of one as soon as I walk out the door today. But head coach, you know, Doug Peterson's growing on me. I like him. You know, he's got a very sort of down-to-earth perspective. But when you ask him a question, he thinks about it. Doesn't, like, you know, you say muscle memory with my job, and sometimes you just sort of do things. He actually sort of thinks about it a lot. And Frank Reich, who was on his staff, the Colts' new head coach, same thing. Like, I felt like he sat there and kind of took 1-1,000, 2-1,000, then answered the question. It was like, man, I just appreciate that from you know, John Fox to Bill Belichick to whoever else who just sort of brushes them off quickly if they don't like the question. So those are a couple that come on mind.
Who's the rookie that you're most excited to see?
Well, Baker, if he plays, that's obviously one of them. I liked him a lot. I think Josh Rosen's going to be really good.
Me too.
I don't get why some people were nitpicking him a little bit. And
I don't understand it either. Yeah. Like, I really don't. Like, it was one of my crusades this past year was trying to understand why people don't like him. Like, when I heard people say, well, first of all, it was incorrect, the idea that he's a millennial, because he's actually Generation Z, which is different.
It's good.
So that bothered me. As an educator, that bothered right. me that people got that wrong. Number two, don't you want a quarterback to ask questions?
Yeah.
I don't, like, who wants the quarterback robot?
Right.
I want the quarterback that is trying to understand what we're doing and then is able to adapt once given more information.
Yeah. I mean, the Jim Mora quote on paper looked really bad. When you heard him say it, like, I could kind of see sort of, but he still said, you know, those millennials asking those questions. It was like, dude, right.
I mean, who's playing elite right now? A bunch of millennials.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Take out Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Philip Rivers. And, you know, right. I think he's going to be like Rodgers in the sense that, is he going to be the most sort of chummy, friendly guy every day of the week? No, he's smarter than a lot of people, and he's going to have that kind of smarmy thing. You know, Cutler had a little of that, whatever. But guess what? He's got talent. He's got instincts. He's got guts. Go watch the UCLA or USC game last year and look at some of the hits he took, and he kept coming back for more. He's good. So he's one of them. Roquan, I'm telling you, I don't know if it's going to be this year or when, but he's a really, really good player. So, yeah, this year's draft was all like, you know, like offensive linemen and corners. Jair Alexander, the Packers' new corner. I tell you what, he is a fun. I'll make a prediction. I'll say he's in the top 10 of interceptions in the NFL this year.
Wow.
For a rookie corner, right? Okay, that's a little bit out there. So he's another fun one that I think will play well right away.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird one.
But I like where you're going with this. That's a lot of fun.
Random number, right? You know, top 10 in interceptions, sure.
What do you love about covering the game, and what concerns do you have as someone who covers football?
You mean concerns about the state of the football or something like that? Or
taking whatever direction you want to go.
Well, from a media perspective, you know, the exposure is so wide. You're like, I can do most of my job from home, and that's nice, right? But at the same time, like, if you want to get a good story, you sort of have to be in the thick of the action, and you have to work really hard for it now because everything is super controlled and sanitized, and you've seen it. I mean, it's happened in every sport, but So those interesting stories don't always get out there and all that stuff. And you know, it's harder to walk up to players in open locker room when nobody's in open locker, that sort of thing. But as far as the big picture of the NFL, you know, we got the Green Bay Packers financials today and saw what every team got paid out before even taking ticket prices. This game is going to be around for a while. It's not, I don't know, it's not going away tomorrow. Are there real concerns about safety and the next generation of kids wanting to play and maybe quality of play? Yeah. Do I think that's changing in today, tomorrow, or in 5 years? No, I don't.
And the TV thing, what people don't realize when, you know, we get the
ratings.
Yeah. That it's still tracking better than every other portion of television.
Easily.
It's still a behemoth. And if you look at the top 50 television shows from last year, 43 of them are NFL games.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like the idea that the NFL is somehow going to just vanish has always seemed bizarre. Now, what I do think is interesting, and I don't know how much of it you've actually checked out, I think it's interesting how the NFL Network has been like, so here's flag football.
Yeah.
What do you think of this flag football thing that we've got going
trial balloon
with these ex players, and you're watching all their athleticism, and then there's these regular guys playing it, so you can see the difference between what a regular guy looks like playing flag football versus a professional player playing flag football. I think that trial balloon is fascinating.
Oh, yeah. And it can work both ways too, right? It could on the one hand sort of demonstrate the difference between the game we all know and love with full pads and all that. On the other, it can also sort of be that, let's see how this does. Let's see how people react. Do they like it? Is it kind of fun? Is it the kind of thing that could be expanded? Right. So
I think that's 100% what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think that they are absolutely out there showing you flag football and going, do you kind of like this?
Yeah. What do you think? And it wouldn't stun me if people are kind of into it a little bit, and that people are kind of like, oh, okay, I'll check it out and see what the deal is. And do I think they'll ever love it as much as football? Of course not.
No, because we love the violence.
We do.
We flat out. I mean, it's that simple. We love the violence of the game, and we love athleticism plus violence.
I 100% agree with you. That's why you can only make the game so safe. You know, you can only advance technology and the equipment so much. You can only make the rules so draconian that you can't hit guys before it becomes not football, right? So there will be a limiting point of this where you just can't make any more rules. You can't make it any more safe. And at that point, people are going to decide what they want to watch, and it's probably still going to be football in my mind. Maybe I'm naive. I mean, really, but
no, I mean, I think that what is concerning is probably not the right word, but I'm sure the NFL is looking at the fact that basketball has seen an incredible growth in popularity in the last couple of years. If you look at youth baseball now, youth baseball is tracking ahead of a lot of sports, and people thought that baseball was dead.
Yep.
And I think that that's interesting for them in a long-term view.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long-term the NFL looks out. I think they're great at the money grab. Mm. Like, they're great. And the way that they've sold the rights to Thursday Night Football is a perfect indicator of that. Like, this money grab that they got from Fox is fascinating.
The Fox numbers are absurd. Like, it's another reminder that, A, the game is still popular. It's still a viable thing, and people are willing to pay for it. Networks want it, so it's here to stay.
I'm looking forward to, as I'm driving around on vacation on Wednesday night, or Friday night, hearing you and Matt Spiegel. It's going to be good.
Yeah,
you guys are going to have a good time. Eric, thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks for having me,
and
dude.
Thanks
it's
for
awesome.
My Prince book, man. Yeah. That is going to make my weekend.
Yep. Sit down, have a brandy, open that thing up. You'll be 3 hours. You'll be like, it's bedtime, all right.
And pancakes. I mean, what's better than that?
I wish I would have gotten the Prince pancakes. I so wish.
I mean, that's something you got to take a photo of and just tell everybody that you had.
And they'll bag up your phone before you get there too.
That's, oh really?
Oh yeah. Oh, it goes in this like locked up thing.
Okay.
So you get one photo if you pay for it, and it's like in front of Prince's mural, you know. So that's all you get.
I'd pay for it.
Yeah.
I totally would. Eric, thank you.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate it.
Thanks for day one of Guest Week. It was great. All of the hours will be up. I highly recommend you listen to hour one. Sierra Santos was unreal on the show. So please go check out all the hours, but start there. It's a good place to start. Thanks to Herb Lawrence and Eli Herskovich for all their hard work putting this show together in the last 4 hours. We do it again tomorrow. Herbie, who's on the show tomorrow?
Let's see. Dean Davis?
Yes.
We're going to have Alicia Roman in 6 o'clock.
Baby, let's go.
And Vincent Goodwill.
Vincent Goodwill will be in the house tomorrow as well. So we're going to have ourselves a good old time. Julie DeCaro is coming up next. Show her the same love that you showed me. Be back at 6 tomorrow right here on The Score.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Pizza.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.